Dr. Show!
You have all made it through the dance. You have all made it. Dr. Show!
Coming to you from the X-Access, it's John of All Trades with your host, John X.
Welcome to the John of All Trades podcast, episode 83. Your host, John X. Thank you for joining us. Glad to have you back once again. Denver Film Festival Week wraps up right now. Well, not right now, not at this exact moment, but this is the last episode of five that we did in the series. And I got to tell you, it's been fantastic. And we go out with a bang. This one, I don't pick favorites, but this one, I have a special place in my heart because we talked to Josh Waller and Zoe Bell. They are the director and star of the film Camino. Camino comes out not till 2016, but it was screening at the Denver Film Festival. I happened to get to watch it. It's an awesome movie. It takes place in the Colombian jungle, takes place during the height of sort of cocaine and the Escobars. And if you're into the show Narcos right now on Netflix, this will be a great movie for you to see. And Zoe Bell is the star. If you know anything about Zoe Bell, you'll know that she sort of got her start in acting through the Quentin Tarantino universe, which, okay, if you've listened to this show for any amount of time, you know what a huge Tarantino freak I am. So when this was pitched to me, I go, whoa, holy shit. All right. Yeah, let's talk. And I'll be honest with you, it was hard for me not to do this whole episode and want to talk to her about what she's doing in The Hateful Eight, what it was like working on Kill Bill, what Inglourious Basterds was like, what it, you know, doing Death Proof. That was her first real sort of acting gig, not just stunt work, because Zoe is a stunt woman who has transitioned into acting, and she was on the hood of the car in Death Proof. I feel like I did a good job of not talking too much about Tarantino in this episode, because that would have been disrespectful to Josh. And Josh is a talented artist as well. Great director. Camino was awesome. He also made this movie Rays, and he talks about Rays quite a bit, and I did some reading about Rays. I haven't seen it yet, but I'm really excited to see it based on everything that I've read. And so Josh, I think, is his star is on the rise, as is Zoe's. When they come in, we did this interview on a Friday night. It was like, I don't know, 8:30, 8:45 at night. And it was my third one of the day. I was a little bit punchy. I had been drinking with Mike Ott and Nathan Silver before that. And they came in with drinks. So it's a very loose chat. It's a very friendly chat. It's a lot of fun. They're both cool people. They're just good cats. I enjoyed just getting to sit around and sort of bullshit. So this is pretty free-flowing. This has a nice, loose hangout vibe to it. But we cover some real stuff, too. You know, what it's like to film in the jungle, how Zoe feels about the label Badass, you know, what it was like working together. There's a lot here, and this is just a really nice way to cap off the Denver Film Festival. And I'm excited to bring this episode to you. I mean, to get to do five episodes, and five very different types of episodes, is just a real thrill and a real privilege. I mean, starting at the beginning with Ian Cook and Ian O'Doherty, going through David Beck and Olympia Stone, to Joey Skaggs and Andrea Marini, to Nathan Silver and Mike Ott, and then concluding here with Josh Waller and Zoe Bell. It's weird. They were all like menage a pods. They were all three-person pods. How strange is that? I'd just like to publicly acknowledge and give a big thank you to Neil, who is the press contact at the Denver Film Festival. He set all of these up for me. I had to do almost none of the legwork here. All I had to do was prep. He sent me the links to the screeners. He sent me the list. He scheduled them all. He got me my press credentials. He's an awesome dude. I'm going to actually have him on the show too, because I want to talk about his role working behind the scenes at this film festival, because his voice, he told me, was shot by the end of it. And you listen to him, you're like, yeah, dude, it sounds like you've been smoking for like 50 years. And I would doubt he's even north of 30. So very long week, but very rewarding. Thank you to Neil. Thank you also to Hannah, who was interning. She was wonderful. She was there. She was sort of observing various points. And I know she was doing a lot of work during the festival as well. So Denver Film Festival, my infinite gratitude for allowing me to be a part of it and to highlight these awesome filmmakers, including this last episode, Josh Waller and Zoe Bell. We'll get to that in a second. You can find all five of these episodes on the John of All Trades website, which is jonofalltrades.us. There's a tab on the top where it says podcast episodes. Just underneath those words will be a pull-down menu, and you can find Denver Film Festival 2015. All five episodes will be right there. It's easy for your reference. You can also find them in iTunes. We have all 83 episodes, so go back. We have some other film-related ones, too. I'm thinking of Matthew Jones, who's a professional film trailer editor, or Chuck Freiberger, an action sports filmmaker, or Bradley Haig, director of JCVD-DV. He is an awesome auteur who makes films all the time and has a great podcast called Real Nerds. Check them out, too. You know what? RealNerdsPodcast.com. Just awesome dudes. I adore them. Brad's a huge supporter of the show. He's one of the reasons I got into this. And, you know, I thought of him a lot because he's such a film buff and just one of my best friends. So shout out to Brad. Shout out to the Denver Film Festival. Neil, Hannah, everyone who was good enough to sit down with me and be on the show. I thank you. I adore you. And please continue to do great work. Your episodes will live forever on the John of All Trades website. Okay. You know what? Let's get to the last episode. That's enough preamble from me. You know exactly what's going on. It's the Denver Film Festival. We've got Josh Waller. We've got Zoe Bell. They're the director and star of Camino. Great movie. A lot of fun. Zoe absolutely crushes it. Both Josh and Zoe are on the ascent. It was so cool to catch them on the upswing, and I can't wait to see what they do next. But first, let's listen to them here at the Denver Film Festival. That episode begins, number 83, right now. I had some booze before we came in here, so
So
you're good and liquored?
Yeah,
so
no,
I'm
nice and basically lubricated.
Yeah,
and I hope you all are too.
You should literally. Oh, that's right.
There's a pre-party.
Where's your badge, Zoe?
Shut up, Josh.
Where's your badge?
We might need.
Where is the party, Neil?
There's a party at Galvanize, which is right after this thing is done, and then there's Late Night Lounge, which is.
Where we were.
In the hush hush place.
Where we get
in the hush hush place. Alright.
Nothing Galvanize. Like a hush hush place for a party.
Isn't that the name of like a really bad like song by like Prodigy or something?
I was about to say like a bad
like Galvanize. It was like Galvanize. And it was like a techno kind of.
I have Sirius XM. And on 90s on 9, they were playing Smack My Bitch Up.
Oh, it's been a while.
I mean.
And on Lithium, they were playing the other one, Firestarter.
Wow.
And I go, God, Sirius, this is like terrorism. This is too much Prodigy for one person.
Seriously. So you just keep changing the channel. It's like a different Prodigy.
Yeah.
You're like.
It's like Prodigy is taking off my radio.
Just melting.
I was asking Zoe, how'd the screening go?
Oh, it went great.
Yeah?
Yeah. It was really nice. Yeah, it was really good for the two of us to kind of just sit and see like the final cut of the film.
Yeah.
Is this the first time?
Well, the cut hasn't changed, but we made a couple tweaks after Fantastic Fest and such, just to, you know, score. We recolored some scenes just because they were playing a little darker than I wanted to. And, you know, I like to embrace the darkness, but I still want the audience to be able to see the film.
Embrace
so.
The darkness.
It's like... But well, you clearly, you cannot see the character in this shot. There is someone there.
Someone's arguing. Yeah. Who is it? Yeah. I know there's two people.
I feel like it's emotional, but I can't be sure.
Yeah. It feels profound, but I don't know.
Yeah, but I can't tell.
Mm.
Yeah.
Josh, how long have you been in town?
I have been in town for, what, a day?
Day and a bit.
Yeah, a day and a bit.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how's it been going so far?
It's been going well. We had a screening yesterday and screening tonight, and then both were, you know, it was really enjoyable to sit and watch with an audience. So
that's good. Did they, I hesitate to use the word proper, but were they reacting at the proper moment?
That's a tough question because, like, you never really know what people are going to react to, you know. No one's...
Was there anything surprising then?
No.
Surprising about the reaction? Sort of
yeah.
Closer.
To be honest, I don't know. When I'm watching a movie that I'm in like that, I often sort of zone out. I often don't even remember what I said at the Q&A afterwards.
There was a man who yawned next to me.
Did you elbow
during
him
like
face?
During like a like a crucial moment? And
like
he did, and it was like he knew that I was sitting next to him, but he did the and I was like, really, you fuck? Anyway.
Did you punch him in the throat?
I wanted to. I was like,
that's brilliant.
Apparently, that's.
Maybe the audio it was a coping mechanism and he yawns when he's really stressed out.
You know, and it could be, it may not be you.
He was so terrified that he gets the weirdest, you know, reaction.
There's no screaming, just yawning.
Do you, so one time I was hungover with my wife and we were watching Independence Day on AMC or something.
As one does.
And, oh, yeah. And so do you remember the scene where Mary McDonald dies? And it's super emotional, and little girl Mae Whitman goes, is mommy sleeping now? And it's, like, God. Super sad, right? So my wife is not looking at me, but I go. And she goes, what a fucking dick.
That's what she said?
What is he doing? And she looks over at me. I was actually asleep. Like, I wasn't mocking the scene. Like, I had just fallen asleep. And, like, the comedic timing was perfect. May not be this guy's fault. Who knows?
Totally true.
Yeah.
Or he could be doing it on purpose just to fuck with you.
Yeah. Maybe that's he knew clearly you were the director.
He had malicious intent with that yawn.
Personal agenda.
I'm going to find that guy.
I know I'm dialed into whoever's next to me at the theater, always.
Yeah.
So, but Zoe, you said you love Denver, right?
Yeah.
How much time have you spent here?
I had a friend here that I spent a couple of weekends, and then I've kind of spent... I was here for the same film festival, I think it was 3 years ago.
35, right?
Yeah.
Rising Star.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Ah.
I do some journalism.
That was nice.
A little bit.
Good memory. So I haven't spent a lot of time living here, but I've spent a lot of good visit time. And
right.
I feel like I've often ended up at really good restaurants. A lot of really good Bloody Marys. Really good hot dogs.
burgers. Hot dogs, let me guess, Biker Jim's?
Yeah. Tell it. Write that shit down because I want to go there again. And it was a long time ago.
Well, you know what? We talk about them enough. Maybe they'll fucking sponsor me. That'd be great.
You what?
That would be nice if they sponsored me if I say enough nice things about them.
That would be amazing. They're really nice.
And then there's a good Bloody Mary bar down at the Hornet on Saturdays. It's $2.
Oh, then I'm going.
Wait, that's tomorrow.
Yeah, we're recording this tomorrow. On a Friday.
What?
Yeah. So, yeah, they give you the vodka, and then you go and add all the accoutrement as you see fit.
What kind of accoutrement? Is there bacon and shrimp and shit?
Oh, yeah, there's all sorts of crazy shit.
It's, go hungry is what he's saying.
Yeah. And then, breakfasts are good. So, I can
write both of those down.
Yeah, we can turn this into the brunch cast if you want. I mean,
I would do a brunch cast. I think I would be a really good host. If I had to sit at brunch.
Mm-hmm.
And just talk and eat, there would always be most. I'd be a really good brunch.
No, for you, it would be like the worst. It would be like you're going to talk about brunch and all brunch food, but you don't get to eat anything.
Oh, no, that would be torture.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I would never do it.
Yeah.
No, and you're in a room with like no windows or anything, and they just pump in the like fumes brunch from like a really from a brunch kitchen.
You have a sick mind, Josh Waller.
And a little like corner bakery.
That's like a
fresh
horror
bread
film.
And stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, Lucille's does these does this unbelievable Southern cooking down on Logan and Alameda. That's another hot brunch spot. But you have to stand in line. And I live in Denver.
I'm not good at standing in line.
And I'm like, why the hell would I stand in line in Denver? Like, I grew up here and I love this city, but seriously, there's nothing good enough here to stand in line for.
I feel like standing in line's always like...
That's a country song. Don't stand in line in Denver. Is that Brad Paisley? I think it was Brad Paisley.
That is a good question.
Might be Gary Allen.
Was that Rascal Flatts?
No, I don't know. But before I lost a bunch of weight, I looked like that lead singer.
Really?
Which was not cool. I didn't really care for that.
You guys have lost me. I'm not as familiar.
I lost myself. I was just throwing out the only country names
I knew.
But I lost myself. Oh, no. Anyway,
let's move on.
Sitting here with Josh Waller and Zoe Bell.
Sorry.
The director and the star of Camino. So thank you for being on the show. I appreciate it very much. I know it's late. It's Friday. At least we're drinking, right?
Exactly. And you're welcome. Thanks for having
us. Yes.
So
I'll have another tequila thing.
How's it been going with Camino? It looks like you guys are doing the festival circuit right now, yes?
I mean, I don't know that I'd call it a festival circuit. We're kind of hitting a few key festivals and... You know, we'll probably hit some more over in Europe, but, you know, the film is going to be coming out in the first quarter of next year. So we're just kind of biding our time and trying to prepare to get the film out there as best we can.
And reception's been good.
Yeah, it's been largely pretty positive. You know, I think that the film can be somewhat polarizing, and
shocking.
That's okay.
How and unlike
I like doing stuff that is not like, well, so what'd you think of that movie? It was all right.
Yeah,
like
whatever.
I'd rather be like, I hated it, and I'm going to tell you why I hated it, and then make someone go, oh, I kind of want to see that to see if I hate it too.
Has anyone stood up and told you that at like during a Q&A? No.
No, I feel like the feedback's been surprisingly, not surprisingly, has been awesomely awesome. My mum would love my use of vocab on that one. But, like, the people who do stay behind, I think also the comparison is raised where we literally had people with polarized opinions in the Q&As and one guy stand up and say some shit and storm out. And, you know, like, Camino's, I feel like Camino's people dig it or don't dig that kind of movie, whereas Razor's like people were getting offended,
really?
Yeah. Which is somehow sort of slightly satisfying. I don't know.
And Razor was a previous
that was the first
collaboration between you two.
Yeah,
absolutely. When you're so this podcast, one of the things I like talking about is process, and I've spoken to a lot of filmmakers, and I haven't spoken to ones who've made an action movie yet, or. You know, a movie.
Now you have.
That's right. So the question I'm going to ask you is: movie takes place in Colombia,
right?
But was filmed in Hawaii, right?
Correct.
What types of challenges are associated with having a crew and a cast out in that type of environment, being in the jungle, dealing with heat? Can you talk me through sort of how that's different from maybe a different type of movie making experience?
Yeah, well, I mean, we can, I can use the examples of Camino and Rays, which was the first movie that we did together, and they couldn't be more different in terms of, like, how the production went, So Rays is about, women that are all in these, concrete bunkers underground.
Right.
For the entire film. And, the entire set was built on a soundstage in Burbank. So we always went to work the same day. Never had to worry about weather. It was like everything was there. Everything was already set up.
Right. Fairly controlled environment.
Yeah, it was pretty chill. And then Camino was the exact opposite. But, where the good thing...
But in Hawaii instead of in Burbank. Yeah. So there was some irony there.
And, I had shot a film down in Colombia about a year prior and was eager to get back down there and shoot something. But the problem was is that we were making, Camino on a relatively, tight budget.
Sure.
It wasn't like nothing, but right. We were ambitious, to say the least. We just didn't have the money to all get down to Colombia. So we just thought, well, where do we have jungles in the United States? And it ended up being Hawaii.
Yeah.
The plus of that was... If we were going to be shooting in the jungles of Colombia, I feel to really get the look and the feel that we wanted, and I feel like we would have had to immerse ourselves fully. And in Hawaii, the environment and the weather is so interesting and so drastic that you can be, right along the coast, staying in a house where it's like blue skies and everything's great, and then you drive 5 miles inland. And park your car and walk down into a ravine 20 feet off, and you are in the rainforest.
It's an accessible jungle.
Wow.
Craft services and like base camp would usually be like just 20 or 30 feet away.
Oh, great.
It wasn't like luxurious or anything by any means.
No.
But you're not out there, you're not having to camp every night.
No. No. Okay. Everyone went home, everyone was able to shower.
Which was important.
Yeah, very important.
Everyone needed to by the end of the day.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Everyone destroyed, so many articles
of clothing.
Yeah, over the course of the shoot.
How does the equipment react to a situation like that? Does that present additional challenges?
Of course. It's as you might imagine. If you look at it like a... you're going to war, right. And you have your rifle. I mean, you have to clean your rifle, otherwise it's going to jam. It's just preventative maintenance. So if you have a very strong camera department, a strong grip and electric department, they tend to be extremely protective and meticulous with their maintenance of their gear,
because
they know that if that happens, it's on them. It's not really on the weather. It's on them.
Yeah.
Because there are steps that can be taken.
Sure.
And the last thing that they want is for the production to be held up.
Yeah.
With them. So we were lucky. We didn't
got
really
an
have any problems.
Crew.
Yeah.
That's great.
We had a great crew. And
how long was the shoot?
The first part of the shoot, we did it as like a split. Mm-hmm. The first part was 11 days. We had Zoe for 7 of those. Mm-hmm. And then we had a little bit of a hiatus, so to speak. then we all went back to Hawaii to shoot another 8 days.
Okay.
It was 21 total. 1 day in Mexico, 1 day in L.A.
Okay. So, Josh, one thing I read about you, you were in the Marines, correct?
Yeah.
Does military-style training prepare you well for directing? Does that prepare you for directing the elements? Does it
nothing
prepare you for this?
Nothing prepares you to work with this.
Yeah, nothing compares to the Marine Corps.
But, I mean, does that inform how you run a movie set? Does that inform your directing style at all? Or is that...
Absolutely. I mean, and if I said otherwise, I'd be lying. You
okay.
Know, it's... I didn't go to film school, you know, when people have asked, oh, did you go to film school? And I'm like, no, I went to the Marines.
Yeah.
I think that vision isn't necessarily something that you can be taught, you know. It's imagination is just there, and, like, everybody has it. You know, some people tend to suppress it, you know, as you become more of, like, an adult, and you can't, like, just live in your imagination. But I'm fortunate enough to work in an industry where it's all about imagination, you know?
Yeah.
So... that's always kind of been there, the fascination with film and with cinema. I've always been obsessed with movies. And so the Marines just basically helped solidify how to get the job done.
Yeah, getting shit done, right?
And how to do it with respect to the team that you're working with.
Right.
And I most definitely referred to think that the goals of filmmaking and the goals of the Marine Corps are actually very similar.
To save the world!
Exactly. which is like, you know, number one, getting the job done, and number two, taking care of your people. And if you take care of your people, then you'll get the job done. You know, so...
Absolutely.
Seems kind of
basically,
simple.
Basically, he's
seems
a drill
simple.
Sergeant and a complete
yeah.
prick.
I'm not saying that I don't, like, push people.
Sure.
But I don't do it because I'm trying to be an asshole. I do it because I believe in what we're doing. And I think that that gives me a little bit of, you know, leeway
yeah, no,
sometimes.
I was totally joking. And he's not a drill sergeant.
Yeah, but...
at all.
Yeah, no, but you've seen...
Get shit done, but not...
I just kind of like... It's like when the going... Oh, I just want to sing a Billy Ocean song. When the going gets
That's
tough,
what I mean. That's not drill sergeant. Good. He's like, yo, drop and give me
Billy. We used
Billy.
To sing Billy Ocean all the time in the Marines, which was weird. I know.
Yeah, that is weird.
We all love Jewel of the Nile, so...
That's wow. unlike the Marines that I know.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I love Jewel of the Nile. I wasn't in the Marines. They couldn't handle me.
Anyways, weird transition.
That's why we have like 45 minutes to an hour here.
Oh, got it.
Because you just can ramble.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, we have space. We are constrained by nothing here.
Do you ever edit out really long,
just like
boring,
life, my friend.
Wombling bits?
I can. I haven't had to, so don't make me start.
Is that a challenge?
Don't interview Jim Morrison. What?
I'm like, wait, is that a challenge? You just sit here silently for 20 minutes challenging?
Well, I'll tell you what. I don't think I'll interview Jim Morrison considering he's dead.
So they say.
Yeah, although they never found him.
Reportedly. Yeah. Apparently.
I don't know. He's off chilling with Jimmy Hoffa somewhere. Just the two Jims.
Just
they never
chilling,
found.
Chilling Jims.
So, Zoe, one thing I'm curious about is... You got Rising Star at Denver Film Festival 35,
mm-hmm.
and you're back here at 38. Also in Colorado recently filming The Hateful Eight, which I'm personally looking forward to immensely because I'm a big Tarantino fan.
It's amazing.
I'm very, very excited. What can I say about
you
it?
You should be.
you're not helping.
You should be. How's it feel? Tell me.
It's like a longing that I have.
It's a deep, burning desire.
I feel it in the pit of my being.
Okay.
That
good.
I cannot fill.
Why are you gripping the mic like that?
because I can't help it. But one thing I'm curious about is... You started as a stunt woman, right?
Yeah.
And have made the transition into acting. Now, a quick digression about me. I used to work for an energy drink company that sponsored athletes, a number of whom got into stunt work. Now, I know that the shelf life and the career, like, that's very physically demanding.
Yeah.
And can be very career limiting. Did you always have your eye on acting when you got into stunt work, or was that a transition that happened sort of organically?
I know, it's so shit that such a good word has been so misused by Hollywood, eh? Organic. I hate that they've screwed that word up.
Yeah.
It's such a good word, and you feel like such a wanker using it.
Well, you know what? I'm not in Hollywood, so I don't know. Did I use it correctly, or was
no,
I still
totally
a dick?
No, you totally used it correctly. Right, I find that it now feels like anytime I'm like, it's because it felt so organic, I feel like I should
be eating
granola.
Yeah, but I almost feel like yours didn't even happen. Like, organic, it was like completely out of the blue.
Yeah, so no, I yes, okay. Exactly. I had
so
no,
you did not have
like,
your eye on
oh,
acting.
I just had this smooth
well, here's
transition.
The, no, not at all. And no, not at all. And here's the other thing is, I'm not sure of a time in my life prior to sort of now that I've ever had my eye on anything further than the day after. Like, I've just never been a forward-thinking type.
Gotcha.
I'm in the process of currently training myself. Failing miserably, but I'm trying. I'm re-upskilling.
I just have to finish that time machine.
Just have to be, exactly. Just have to buy that diary. It's so hard. But no, I really didn't consider it. And I think also because I don't think you really consider, you know, like mortality, you don't recognize that until either something happens very tragically in your life that makes you see it, or until you're just older.
Right.
You know, so when I was younger, I was like, whatever, I'll fall on my head for the rest of my life. And I got to like 24 and I was like, somehow the appeal of literally just falling on my head is like, I mean, I'll do it if it's part of the job, but it's not this, right. It, you know, it shifts a little bit. And it absolutely didn't happen sort of like smoothly and organically. It literally happened because Quentin wrote me into one of his scripts. That was it.
Death Proof?
Into Death Proof, yeah.
Okay. And was that as a result of him liking what you did on, like...
I paid him. No, I'm kidding. As a result of me paying him my life savings and my firstborn child. No. I think it was a combination... You'd kind of have to ask him, but I think it was a combination of our working relationship that formed on Kill Bill.
Yeah.
He's, you know, this thing developed where he was...
Because you were Uma Thurman's stunt double?
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
And he kind of started the conversation with me that was sort of to treat me, have me treat my career as a, or my job as a stunt woman the same way an actor would. And he expected the same of me that he would expect an actor in terms of motivation and intention and why are you running up the stairs?
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Yeah. He stopped me on set one day and he was like, Zoe, before we do this shot, the running up the banister shot, it's like, why are you, you know, what are you doing in this shot? And I was like, I'm running up those stairs. And he was like, yes, but why are you running up those stairs? And I was like, I feel a trick question. I can feel it. I was like, because
you told
that's my
me
job,
to?
And that's yeah, because someone's going to say action, probably you. And,
right.
And he was like, yes, but so what? And I said something like, because I'm trying to get to the top. And he was like, yes, but why are you getting to the top? Who's at the top? And I was like, ding. Yeah. I was like, I'm going to get Oren. And he was like, and why are you going to get Oren? And I was like, because that bitch fucked up my life. Oh, she right. stole my daughter. Revenge. And he was like, okay, and action.
Now run up the goddamn man.
Now run up the stairs. You know, and so right. It was that was sort
and
of like.
And tripped.
And I tripped and fell and slid down them.
And then they replaced her with a different actor.
Yeah, exactly. And they just had Uma do
sorry.
It.
I want to ruin your story.
No, you totally ruined it. It's fine. Screw you, John. But. You bastard. But so I think that...
Sorry, how many times have you heard that story, Josh?
I've never...
It was actually poignant until he fucked it up, but thanks, Josh.
Mm-hmm. Wow, what a dick.
But it was one of those... It was literally that relationship, I think, that he found an interesting challenge was to try and access that side of me.
Oh,
and then at the same time, a documentary called Double Dare was being filmed that was about me and another... Wonder Woman stunt double back in the day, Jeannie Eppa, and me and Kill Bill, that chapter of my life is sort of like the final chapter in this documentary. And he loved the documentary. And I guess he kind of got in his head that the character in the documentary he would like to have be a character in a movie.
Hmm.
And he put those two together and he was like, I should have Zoe play her. This is a great idea.
And is that how Death Proof came about?
Literally, I didn't even know. I had no idea I had dialogue in the film until I read the script.
Wow.
I know, which I know is a great story, but I think about it now, literally, and I'm like, that was ballsy on his behalf.
Well, that...
Why,
how did I
like
not...
Like, you might have turned it down?
No. But I mean, like, having not talked... I feel like he'd want to feel me out and to see if he could trust me with it.
Yeah, but I feel like a lot of that what is, he needed you to know, know, like, some people don't audition people. You
yeah.
Know, sometimes some directors just, like, I don't agree with auditioning necessarily because it's... unnatural you know, just for people in general, but also for actors.
Well, it's
so
not
it's like
what
you,
you're getting on
if
the
you
day
know
anyway.
Someone personally, that gives you an idea of what they are capable of in their natural state. And ultimately, you want people, when they act, you want them to be as natural as possible. So
And I think he...
And every director likes a good challenge, too. So.
Yeah, there was definitely part of that, I'm sure. But I think that's what I mean, is because he'd already... as far as he was concerned, he'd worked with me as an actor already on Kill Bill.
Right.
So when I was like, what do I do? How do I learn lines? What does that look like? How do I do it? Do you have a teacher? Do I go to acting class? What do I do? He was like, do nothing except for learn your lines. Learn your lines inside out, because you're not to fuck up my dialogue. I was like, trust me, I will know everybody's dialogue. But he said, don't go to acting class, because I know what I need from you and I know how to get it, and I don't want you to be conscious of it or learn tools that might mask it.
Was that flattering for you to hear?
It was terrifying, because in my head I was like, the way I've always approached a lot of stuff with stunt work is it's like someone says, we need you to jump off this building, or we need you to learn how to do a horse fall, or, you know. My challenge is like, okay, I have this length of time and these resources to learn that. And that makes me feel safe, because I'm like, well, if you give me that challenge and tools to learn, I will learn.
Yeah, yeah.
But when someone says, you're going to have to do this, and I'm not giving you any tools, trust me that you know how to do it. It's a bit like, I don't have a safety blanket that lets me relax into being...
You have to be almost like in a zen state, whereas what you're describing is almost like a very type A kind of process, where it's like, okay, I'm going to do everything I can to ensure that I'm not fucking up on my end.
Yeah, no.
Where it's like Quentin goes, no, I know how to get it out of you. You just have to be open to it.
You just have to trust me.
Right.
It's like, oh, Jesus.
Wow. That's intense. Josh, how did you come to get connected with Zoe?
Zoe and I have been friends for like 8 years. We met years
probably ago. Nine now, isn't it?
I don't know.
Haven't we been saying that for like 2 years?
Exactly. We've been saying that for 8 years.
Yeah.
It's like people celebrating the anniversary of their 29th birthday.
Yeah.
Oddly enough, we met through... We met at the premiere to P.S. I Love You.
Oh, holy shit.
Because through Gerard Butler. That was our mutual connection.
That's right.
And we just became friends. And I think it was really close to... Like when Death Proof had come out, like it was not far off.
I feel like,
And we just started, you know, bullshitting. And for me, initially, it was just kind of like, I think you're dope, and I love Death Proof, and you know,
right.
And I was just like, can I get you a drink? Like, I want to talk, and like, you know. And then, you know, at the time, I was still, you know, just working on getting my own shit going. So, you know, we just stayed friends for a long time.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
And so, like, is it one of those things where you go, okay, I finally got something lined up, now we can work together? And, like, I have the right...
The first time, it was always like, we should find something to work on together, but I don't think either of us were, like, actively trying to find a project.
Right.
And when Raise happened, that's... Which is exactly what it was. It just happened.
Yeah.
You know? I was
not
approached with,
either.
You know, one of our producing partners... Kenny Gage, and he was like, read this little short, and I read it, and I had notes, and I had thoughts, but like one of the thoughts was, you know, well, what if we went in like a more serious direction with this, as opposed to like a straight exploitational, you know, film, but like take like the women in prison subgenre like seriously, and like do some real kick-ass fights with some real emotion and heart.
Avoid the oil. The mud fighting.
Exactly.
Right.
So, Jello.
And then I brought up Zoe to Kenny, and he was like, "Well, yeah, you know, that'd be great, but you know, how are we going to get her?" And I was like, "Oh, well, she's a friend.
Yeah,
you can call her, and we've been talking about doing something.
I got this."
And the same thing happened with you know Rachel Nichols on that, and it was a little bit of like a Death Proof reunion because Tracy Toms was in it, and Rosario Dawson came for a day. You know?
Nice,
so awesome.
Everyone kind of.
That's badass. How much is a film set like a family?
It depends, but there's definitely... I think often when that seems to happen the most is on films when you're in location, because it becomes very much sort of like...
Is it almost like camp?
Well, I was about to say, at risk of euphemizing it too much. Euphemizing? Put that in the Zoe Actionary. Entry number 5.
Euphemizing in the Zoe Actionary.
Yeah, Zoe Actionary. That's how that works. But it has a similar thing to sort of a summer camp or being on vacation, because like you're working together. It's kind of more intense too, because you're working together and you're slogging and stressing and getting excited and completing stuff together and all of that. And you tend to also socialize and let off steam and kind of do all that part together too. And you kind of, it becomes sort of a bubble. So I love that sense of family that comes with a film set, and especially if you're working on a TV show regularly, that definitely, like Xena was a family for me for sure, and then some pretty crucial kind of teenage years. So, but it's also one of the weird things about filmmaking is you like, you know, you bond with these people for 3 months, you know all about their kids and this and that, or maybe you don't know anything about their real life, you only know about what's right in front of you all the time. And then you wrap the movie and you go back to living in Los Feliz versus Venice and you never see each other again until the next movie, it might be 2 years, and you kind of keep in contact, but you know, so it's a really strange temporary family, which I think is definitely has advantages and disadvantages, and I think it's definitely one of the things that challenge most relationships, I think, because it's hard to relate to, it's, you know, when someone's like, you remember at summer camp, and everyone who wasn't at summer camp is like, shut up, I wasn't there, I don't know, you know.
Same thing happened to me in college one time where we hung out.
Why am I laughing already? Sorry. You just said that like it was the beginning of a joke.
Maybe it is.
Uh-oh.
It isn't, so spoiler alert. But, we hung out with all different people in the summer because in our college, almost everyone went home. Yeah. And then the people who lived elsewhere came back. So we hung out with all these different people. Our buddy came home and we're telling these stories. Oh, yeah. Remember when we were with Mitch and Keely and Rosa? And my buddy's in the backseat. He's silent for like 30 seconds.
Oh,
and then
bless
just
him.
And then just goes, who are these people?
Oh, bless.
And I
it's
go,
like, what is this world you refer to that I know nothing about?
I'm like, you poor motherfucker living in Alaska.
Living in Alaska.
He did. He went up to Fairbanks and started pouring concrete because Alaska's got three seasons. Snow, and construction.
Wow.
Brilliant. And so, yeah, it's. I didn't write that one. That one's so hacky. But
Run with it.
So you mentioned Camino is being released in the first quarter of next year, right? And what kind of release is it getting?
We're talking to the distributor about that very thing right now.
Hey, I'm currently on the phone.
It's this company Accelerator, who is really standing behind the film itself and has stood behind our vision, and they really they get it. And that doesn't always happen.
Yeah, that's a rare thing.
You hear horror stories about distribution, and that's just not the case with them. You know, and so, like, in terms of, like, the artwork, it's all really insightful. And, you know, we're using, you know, all the artwork that Jay Shaw of Mondo has done and is doing. And they're like, yeah, it's amazing. And it's like, that doesn't always happen either. It's like, they get it. And yeah.
What do you chalk that up to? I mean, in terms of when you're making a movie, then you get it to distributors. Do they see the film differently than you? And I mean, how does that happen? Because it seems like if you want to distribute a film, you would not want to fuck with it too much. Or is that just me being naive?
You'd think so, wouldn't you? Yeah.
I mean, obviously, I've never made a movie. I've never tried to get distribution for it. But so I'm interested in the insight on that.
It depends on what sells. You know, it depends on where the movie's playing, what the territory is, if it's, you know, in the Middle East or if it's, you know, in South America or wherever. And maybe they relate to this more than, you know, they relate to this in the UK.
And
you know, there's
objectivity
so many
of,
factors.
Like, if you've got a distribution company who sees, let's say, for example,
that another one for the Zoe Actionary.
Zoe Actionary. Entry number 752. Yeah. That, you know, a distribution company might look at, let's say, for example, Camino, and they're looking dollar signs because that's their business and their job is to make money selling this film. And they might go, oh, great, action film. And if they don't get that it's not strictly an action film, which, you know, if you're not into it for those reasons, you might not be looking for it. If this ticks enough of the boxes, then when they go to distribute it, it might be that they're trying to funnel it into strict action portals where you're then reaching out to the wrong people, or you're selling it under false pretenses, or people that are real action fans are like, that's not what, you know what I mean? So there can be a misinterpretation there where, so when people get it and they're like, either we're going to let you run with it, or we've got these ideas and they relate to what you're feeling about it, that's kind of that's a nugget. Yeah. That's a good one to come across.
That's interesting because when you're making a film, how much during the process of making the film, are you cognizant of the marketing, or are you at all?
I love
of the
word
of the marketing?
Wish I could put that in my Zoe dictionary, but that already exists.
I mean, I always just kind of think about that. I toy with those ideas, you know, like,
oh, what will a poster look like? And then, you know, or we'll be shooting a scene and, you know, we'll finish something and I'll look at it like a shot or something and be like, oh my God, that's going to be, that'll be a cool thing in the trailer. You know, just be, that's the fanboy in me though. Right. That's not like the producer or the director in me. It's like, oh, I want to see that, you know, that kind of thing. But
you hope
I'm
not
got really
producers that are the ones going, Pierce, we need, in order to make it sellable, we need this, this, and this, and that. Can you incorporate that in some, you know what I mean? There's you hope that the director's vision is what's going to make it enough, and if there are certain things, then conversations can be had. But, and I think some directors definitely consider it when they're going into it, and some don't, you know.
And there's also, like, I don't, you know, I didn't go to, like, the school of indie kind of art house films. That's not right. What I grew up with. I went to, like, the Amblin Film School, so everything that I see, even if I'm doing it, like, on a micro budget, like, it's almost like every shot that I come up with is, like, way too complicated. And, like, it's like, you know that we don't have that much money or that much time, right?
Or
it's
a
like,
crane.
Yes, I know. You say that every time, but, you know. What about this?
How many helicopters
How
do
many
you need?
Exactly. You know, which, that's funny because it actually became like a running joke.
Oh, shit,
of the,
really?
Yeah, the cinematographer and the editor both had like this campaign about like, where's the helicopter? And so like, I would be going through my shit throughout the course of the shoot and I might like just open up a book or something and there'd be like a post-it and just be like, where's the helicopter? And I'd be like, you sons of bitches! Or like, I'd wake up like really early, like no one else would awake, and I'd like go to the bathroom and there'd be like something in there, like where's the chopper or something. Where's the chopper?
Get to the chopper! It wouldn't be a podcast if there weren't a Schwarzenegger reference in it.
Those are my cookies.
So this is now officially
you
could
eat my
a
cookies.
Podcast.
Yeah, I've done 82. Yes, 82. No, wait a minute. Fucking Jesus. I've done. That's in the John Dictionary.
Mm-hmm. That's the only word in it.
Terrible profanity and blasphemy all at the same time.
Love it.
Comes out in really hideous combinations. But so I've done like 80 episodes, and I swear to God, in a quarter of them, there's a Schwarzenegger impression in it. And it, like, it's with people who are not associated with movies at all. It's just, it's part of the lexicon. What I was going to say was, one thing that's interesting is I was speaking with a filmmaker who makes like action sports documentaries. So like, people doing wingsuits and shit like that, and, you know, bouldering and stuff.
Sick.
And he said, you know, I used to work with filmmakers, and when they would say, oh, I'm uncompromising in my vision, I used to go, wow, that person really has their art dialed in. And then I started making films myself, and if someone said they were uncompromising, I go, fuck that, I'm not working with that guy.
Yeah.
Right. And I always found that interesting, so you talking about, you know, your editor and your DP, you know, fucking with you with the helicopter. It sounds like a really great environment to come to work in every day.
Well, it is. And, you know, you brought up the whole, like, you know, family element. And I think that's really important because, you know, it's an industry that, you know, is like, you know, glamorized because it's like Hollywood. But it's also an industry that is like largely, you know, backed on rejection. So, you know, and hurt egos and, you know, and such. So, you know, and a lot of people I feel like that were involved or are involved within like the arts or the industry were maybe potentially like outcasts when they were younger. Or always kind of searching for the right group, and maybe they might have been like really popular, but they were still kind of like always on the outside and trying to find like the people that they were trying to connect with. So when you get that going here, all it can do is benefit everyone involved because it just it allows everyone to put their guard down.
Yeah,
and just. There's no place for ego in art.
Ironically, exactly.
There's you can doesn't mean that you can't have, you know, pride for what you're doing. And I'm not saying that I am without ego. I fight it.
Sure.
You know, but that's important. I think you should fight it.
Well, you know, it kind of comes down to two. Like, it's always that thing where sometimes you have the most fun on a set, and the movie turns out to be a piece of shit, and then you have a hideous time on the shoot, and the movie's a masterpiece. There's no,
yeah.
It's often not equatable, but I think the belief that, you know, they have, people have to work miserable and this and that to earn art, I disbelieve that.
Like Kubrick style.
And, yeah, and you're, yeah, you're going to piss each other off. That's like, that's undeniable.
And
so
that doesn't,
like,
always mean that art doesn't get made. But
no.
If you want life and art to communicate and be like, I want my day-to-day life that includes my work to be a life I want to be in.
Right.
So if I'm on a set, I want to make it as comfortable and enjoyable for everybody, because that just means the life I'm living. Forget the movie. My day-to-day life is just better for it. And that, not everyone feels that way. I've worked with plenty of people who would much rather be screaming and stomping their feet. And I don't know what happens when they go home.
But also, like, when you hit, like, the tough patches, like, with a production, people are much more inclined to go the extra mile if they feel like they're
terribly.
All doing that, doing it together, and, you know, you're not just walking on people's backs.
Yeah, if they have personal loyalty to the project, then it's not like you're asking a favor of them as much as we're all pulling together to get this shit done, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's tough, but it's also tough, you know, like, we're, you know, we've worked together, you know, now a couple times, and we've known each other for years, so she knows that, you know, my various moods on set. I'm making it sound like I'm like some crazy tyrant.
He is
I'm not.
A psychopath.
But, like, there are times where, like, I want what I want, and I want to get it done as quickly as possible.
Sure.
And if I'm working with crew that I maybe don't know as well, that don't know the nuances of my personality. I mean, shit, I don't even know the nuances of my personality.
I think it's a fallacy that we know ourselves very well at all.
Totally. Yeah, no, not at all. Like, I'm every day I'm trying to figure myself out, and
I look in the mirror and I'm like,
I don't know what that is.
That's what it sounds like when you look in the
mirror.
Exactly. Yeah. Terrifying.
Well, who is it? It's Roger Ebert who says it takes a very large crew of extremely talented people working very hard to make a terrible movie.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it just goes to show you not everything comes down to talent. Not everything comes down to hard work. Some of it is just sometimes the fucking tumblers don't line up right?
But it also comes down to checks and balances.
Sure.
You know, and if you have that family and you have that kind of trust... Like, there's, you know, I consider, you know, the key creatives that I work with, I mean, I trust them completely, you know. You know, my editor, Brett Bachman, we met years ago, and I will never hire another editor. Like, he just...
As long as he's available.
Yeah, and...
Exactly.
And there's a lot of choices within the film that, like, I'm extremely proud of that were not my ideas, that were Brett's ideas. You know, I get to take the credit because I'm the director, but you know, they were his choices, but you'd like let him. Like, I'm not going to stand over his shoulder and tell him how to edit.
No,
like, that's not my job. That's his job.
Hire someone else.
Let him do his
thing.
Trust
them to do their own edit.
Yeah, well, I don't want to work with just technicians.
Different.
You want to work with artists.
I spoke to a guy who edits film trailers, and he said a film is written three times.
Oh, yeah.
Once when you write it, once when you direct it, and once when you edit it, right?
Yeah.
And that's part of Brett's job, right? Yeah. And as a good editor, you may see he may see things that you don't see. And the fact that you're willing to trust him speaks very highly of the process. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah.
It reminds me of Tarantino working with Sally Mankey.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say that, yeah.
Yeah, of course, because I'm that level of nerd when it comes to this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that was... The description of their relationship, it's what you just articulated to me.
Yeah.
It's always cool to hear.
Yeah.
So,
it's a cool thing to witness, too.
I'll bet. So, Zoe, one thing I wanted to ask you is...
No.
Perfect. Right. Next question.
Next question.
So, in prep for this, you know, read a little bit about you. You are frequently described as a badass.
Yeah. Yes, I am.
Does that
definitely that is actually one of the words that I can agree with without feeling like
you should totally get that tattoo.
I'm just gonna get badass written on my forearm.
Yeah, and you should get it in like old English like style. On your shoulder.
On my lower back.
You should get it on your rib cage. I think that's where the kids are doing it now.
That's where the kids are doing it.
Yeah.
That or like a big Cadillac logo, and then you can go to the Jersey Shore.
Just the logo of Cadillac on one side and badass on the other.
Oh my
go
god.
Go on places, people.
That's quality work.
Yeah.
Does that type of expectation, does that ever bother you? Do you feel constrained by that? Do you feel limited, or do you embrace it?
Both. Like, as a person, like in my own personal life, you know, I'm not really aware of having fat days. I'm not really prone to sort of being fat, but I have what I fondly or not so fondly refer to as man days when I start feeling like I feel like a dude. I feel like I feel thick, big shoulder. Like I don't ever feel fat. I feel so. I remember walking out of a restaurant one time and picking up my car from the valet, and the valet guy being like, "Girl, you thick. You work out?" Damn. And he was literally checking me out, and I was like, "Oh, he thinks I look like a brick shit house." Like that's my insecurity. So, so the whole being tough part of that, like there is an element of it that's like sometimes I, particularly in the past, I used to feel like I'm just not very feminine, and I just, you know,
yeah.
So on a personal level, there's that. Because we're on a podcast and we've got time, apparently, for me to stumble into telling you personal details about myself. But like
my ruse has worked.
Yeah, yeah, you're like, yes, yes, dig deeper.
Perfect.
Just falls
over. But at a professional level, it's an ongoing question. But no, I embrace it because A, I love it. B, it's my strength. It's, C, it's where I feel comfortable being like, I can show you this. I can prove to you this. So there's some relief in having a strength there, you know.
Sure.
And having said that, at first I was terrified of the vulnerable side, so I was like, I'm all about being strong because it means no one has to see me cry, no one has to see, you know. And then the longer I've been acting, the more I'm like, well, it's kind of actually now my job is to be emotionally available and accessible and vulnerable and all those hideously terrifying things that were like far scarier than jumping off a moving train somehow.
Was Camino a step forward in that regard?
Yeah, Camino is sort of almost, yes, everything's a step forward. I'll be hopefully stepping forward until I die. But but Camino also has the feeling of being sort of a culmination of a lot of other step forwards. But Raised was the first time I was aware of being like, oh, shit, I'm stepping up to that challenge. Mm. Like that's, and my commitment to it also, I think was really helpful to me was that I was also a producer on that and sort of one of the, it was my baby too. And so when, whatever we were asking of crew or cast, I was asking. So there was a sense of being like, I felt a very deep, honest responsibility to people that were here for us and to make this movie. That it was like the hardest I think I've worked on being emotionally available and discovering this character and blah. And it was after that that it was literally after that project that I was like, I feel comfortable saying the sentence, I am an actor, and it doesn't make me gag, and it doesn't make me want to pass out and hide in a corner somewhere, you know. And so it's been, this was the when he first said to me, describe the character once we'd figured out it was a girl and it was going to be me, we were talking about it, and instead of being like, oh shit, that sounds hard, and oh my god, how am I, okay, I can do it. I was like, yeah, and then this, and what about if this happened? Like, I'm free to be excited about vulnerability now, whereas I was previously just scared of it.
That's awesome.
It's a long answer, but yeah.
No, that was incredibly insightful.
Podcast.
Yeah.
Podcast, yeah.
Got time.
Podcast. Yeah. I'm bored, but they're going
to
love it.
We're not doing the evening news here. I don't need to cut that down into fucking 5 seconds.
Okay, apparently we are
to hear
now
like the old
news.
1960s. The evening news.
Zoe Bell, vulnerability, okay now.
Yeah. So vulnerability, can do.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's our old-timey headline.
Yeah.
So I'll tell you what, we're actually at time now. I won't keep you
See,
guys any
really
longer.
Are we? How quickly did that go?
We've been going for 53 minutes.
I literally was like, so, it's about time for
53
another,
minutes.
Another
53 whole minutes.
1.21.
Thanks, Tom.
That movie takes place in the past now, which is terrifying. I don't care
the
for that.
The future is now the past?
Yeah.
What the hell?
I don't. I remember seeing that movie as a kid and thinking, God, 2015, I'm going to be 34. Fuck
You're like,
that.
I'll definitely be dead by then.
But no, I have a wife and a home and a child, and wow.
Yeah.
And you go, that's mind-blowing.
But do you have a hoverboard? That's what I want to know.
No.
No one does.
No, and I blame Robert Zemeckis for that. Because
I blame Robert Zemeckis for everything.
Yeah. I blame Robert Zemeckis, my parents, and the liberal news media. And
for everything.
I'm making that up. I don't blame any of those people for anything.
That's not true. Everyone blames their parents for something.
No, that's not
going to get me started.
Kidding. My parents are perfect. My whole life is flawless. Anyway.
So here's the part in the show where you guys plug whatever you want to plug. Where can people find you? Where can they find out more about Camino? Where can they see it? Plug away.
Part. Will you do this part? Can plug you plug away. Plug for me as well?
Zoe Bell, she's a badass.
There you go. With vulnerability.
Look her up.
It's Zoe
it's
Bell is
www.google.com.
Google. Yeah, two O's?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I've heard of that.
G's.
Isn't it Goggle? I heard it's Goggle.
Goggle.com. Oh, there's pictures of me everywhere.
My grandpa.
No, it's the new hipster search engine. It's Google.
Google.
So,
but
you haven't heard of it yet, though.
Yeah, Camino. It'll be coming out in the beginning of 2016 through Accelerator, and it's with Zoe Bell and Spanish filmmaker Nacho Vigalondo. And
who crushes it in this movie.
Oh, my God. Thank you. He's so amazing.
That guy. He's a scene
He's busy shooting a movie right now.
Excuse me? What are you trying to say?
No.
Not from you.
Yeah.
I'll kill him.
Yeah.
Good.
He deserves to be killed.
I don't know why people call me bad. No. It's sort of unfair.
Check it out when it comes out. Yeah. And if you can, check out Raze, because I recently kind of looked at some scenes, and I was like, I like that movie.
Okay, if you know nothing about Raze, those noises that he just made are completely
Yeah, it made it sound like it was like,
movie.
Aw, I love Steel Magnolias.
Yeah, except for Raze is just me Disney.
I can't wait
people.
For it to air on Hallmark.
Yeah, exactly.
And Disney.
Oh, Raze.
Don't knock Hallmark. Didn't Hallmark? Who did that? Oh, that was Lifetime. I was thinking about the Will Ferrell Kristen Wiig.
Oh, yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, did you watch that?
Yeah, I did. I loved it.
I kind of wish that no one knew it was coming out beforehand, though.
And
landed.
People
like you stumbled upon
is
it.
Is this really? Yeah, that would have been awesome.
That would have been awesome.
But I think that's impossible in this day and age.
Yes, I think so.
No one can get away with anything. Is there like a Facebook page, a website for Camino? Like people can keep up with it, that kind of thing.
Not right now, but there will be. Stay tuned.
Camino the movie on Twitter. I don't know if there is. I feel like there is. Is there not?
You know what? I don't know.
You know what? I'll do the heavy
How
lifting
about
here.
You
I'll
do
put
the
it in the blog.
And then
yay!
Yeah.
Thank you.
So there will be a companion.
We're not bloggers. Good with this. We're getting better.
Yeah.
No, we're not. We're really.
You're right. Yeah.
Well, you know what? Maybe you will. Maybe you won't. Who gives a shit? Go see Camino.
Go see Camino.
Thank you. Yes, please do.
So, thanks for taking the time, guys.
Thanks,
enjoy your
John
Friday night.
Trades.
I appreciate it very much. Continued success to both of you.
Thank you very much.
Abel Trades.
Huh?
John Abel Trades. That's his last name. It's Abel Trades.
It's
Greek.
What if it's
Dutch.
John of? Altrades.
Don Ofertradis.
Don of Altrades.
I was like the Swedish chef.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm so glad I didn't turn it off.
Okay.
Yeah. You missed gems.
All right, thanks, guys.
Bye.
And we say goodbye to the Denver Film Festival here on the John of All Trades podcast. Closed it out. Zoe Bell, Josh Waller, star and director of Camino. It's coming out in 2016. Look for it. Go to the blog, John of All Trades, JONofAllTrades.us, and check out all 5 interviews I did from the Denver Film Festival. They're all there. They're all under the tab Denver Film Festival 2015. Look for that at the top. Also, look for us on Facebook and Twitter, JOATPod for both. It's an easy way to catch up with John of All Trades. We're going to be back to a normal schedule. Only one of these a week. I'm sorry. This has been a real treat for you and for me. That's awfully presumptuous for me to say. It's been a treat for you. Enjoy it. It's been a treat for me. Thank you for coming along for the ride. Thanks for listening to all these great filmmakers. And you know what? Get out there and support independent film. Get with the Denver Film Society. They are always doing great work. Follow them on Twitter. It's at Denver Film. And, I mean, what can I say? A thing of beauty is a joy forever. And the Denver Film Festival has so much beauty in it that I can't say nice enough things about them. So, we'll be back here next week. Regularly scheduled episodes coming up every Monday. We tease them, and then we drop them on Wednesday. So, follow us on the social media, subscribe on iTunes, download us on Stitcher, however you want to listen. Give us a rating, give us a review, share it with your friends. Tell more people about the John of All Trades podcast. We'll keep cranking them out for you. So, until I see you next time, say goodnight, Gracie.